It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio, produced by Pete Zimmerman. I'm John Williams. Thanks for dialing in. 312-981-7200 is, we say, good afternoon to Terry Savage. Hi, Terry.
Hello. Good afternoon. A busy afternoon in the money markets today.
That's because of the Fed?
You know, it's like a giant funnel. And at the bottom of the funnel, what comes out is going to be what the Fed says. But what you're throwing in at the top is the infrastructure, is politics and money, infrastructure bill, tax increases, how are they going to deal with that, and then add to the mix the upcoming and impending reaching of the debt ceiling, which, you know, we've danced along before in the past, but never have defaulted on our debt or not sent out Social Security checks, et cetera, or paid interest on Treasury bills. But that's all in the mix in a very volatile political funnel. And then the Fed is got to do its thing and say, well, which it's likely they'll say, you know, we've been putting $121 billion in new money into the economy every month. We buy Treasury bonds, we buy mortgage-backed securities. By doing that, we pay for that in the open marketplace with newly created liquidity. Nobody ever asked the Fed chairman to put his driver's license number on the back of a check, I used to say in the old days. And so maybe the Fed is about to say, we're not going to do that anymore. And that's what the stock market's trying to figure out the last couple of days. And then the wild card, of course, was China.
Wow.
But I never thought that was really a big impact on the market. It was an excuse for nervous people to get out.
Oh, that's an interesting observation, because I was going to ask you about that, and a reminder that it is of the interconnectedness of all of our economies. I mean, I didn't know about this company in China and that they were over-leveraged, and now banks want the money and they ain't got it. And I'm like, how does that affect me?
Well, yeah, but it doesn't particularly. This is really interesting because, you know, our banks aren't allowed to do business in China. So we're not directly impacted in any financial way by that. But I was thinking about this morning. I do my best thinking when I'm in the shower washing my hair, and I was thinking about this. I was thinking we want China to succeed. We don't seem to want them to have financial problems in their banking industry because we sell them a lot of stuff, and we also buy a lot of, I will call it cheap, less expensive stuff from them. So there's a sense that we really don't want China to have problems, or do we? And then on the other sense, we fear them enough to start selling submarines to protect against them, submarines to deal with Australia. So we have very mixed feelings in general about China. They're either our enemy and we have to defend against them taking over the whole Southeast Asia. They're our friends because we want to keep selling stuff to them. We ignore certain human rights violations and so forth because we want them to buy from us. And on the other hand, we're competitors. So the world hasn't figured out what the relationship will be.
Yeah, I've often thought about that. Are they our enemy or our ally? Economically, they are certainly an ally, or at least a partner. But by the same time, you don't trust them and you don't know that what they're doing is, I guess it wouldn't be in our best interest, but it doesn't even seem to be fair sometimes. I wanted you to also just address what you wrote about on the housing side, the other bull market. You just posted that a day ago. What's that all about?
Well, it's interesting because when I wrote this, it was 2 weeks ago and the market was at its peak, and it just, you know, goes into syndication about a week later. But the fact is that we've been all focused on the bull market in stocks, when in reality, there's been another bull market that's created equally as much wealth. And that, of course, is the bull market in housing and home prices, which are up dramatically. And the question being raised in this column is, well, what happens there? As long as we have low interest rates, as long as the Fed is subsidizing mortgages by buying mortgage-backed securities, people can buy homes. But we just saw statistics, either it was this morning or yesterday, about home sales dipping because of affordability. And in this column, there's some shocking numbers on how the rising prices, despite low mortgage rates, are making homes less affordable.
Yeah.
And if mortgage rates were to rise a bit, which could happen, interest rates could rise, how really unaffordable they would be, and how that could hit housing prices, because you may not be planning to sell, But your neighbor might have to sell, having lost a job or needing to move. And if there are fewer people who can afford a mortgage, that means the price has to come down if they're going to sell. So we don't think of housing as a market. Well, we watch the stock market make new highs. We get the numbers every day. But there might be some vulnerability in the housing market. And I quote Jim Stack, investment newsletter, investtech.com, with some great statistics on housing affordability.
You also, that's Terry Savage. Here's your chance to jump in on the conversation. You got a question. Terry's got something to say about it. 312-981-7200. Terry wrote in her piece, 1 year ago, the median family home price was $297,000. Now it is $370,000. Wow. Got a bunch of questions for you, Terry Savage, on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Let's do it.
Okay, we'll start then with Steve. You're on WGN. Hey, Steve, how can we help you today?
Yeah, I was just wondering. I get paid 2 days early now. I've seen that advertised on TV, primarily Chime, which I bank with Huntington. But nobody's been able to explain how you can get paid 2 days early. I get paid on Tuesday. Everyone else gets paid on Thursday.
Not exactly sure what you're talking about.
Is that your paycheck that you're having direct deposited?
My paycheck, yeah.
Well, your company's probably come to an agreement to make funds available immediately. It's a nice tool to say to, it really doesn't matter whether your paycheck clears on Tuesday or Thursday, but it's a nice thing to say to employees, well, we offer this special deal so you can get at your funds earlier, probably because your company has a banking relationship with them and they have enough funds on hand that it makes sense, especially when these era of low interest rates, the banks aren't making much money holding on till the check would clear.
Yeah.
So that's probably an arrangement your company made with the bank.
Yeah, I get everything. My Social Security check comes 2 days early.
That's interesting.
I used to get paid on the fourth Wednesday of every month, and now I get paid on Monday instead of Wednesday.
Electronically deposited, you mean?
Electronically deposited.
So the bank's covering that in advance, right? They know what it is, and they're just saying, we'll spot you a couple of days ahead, and maybe
I'm really interested in how you could get your Social Security check early. I don't know.
Comes 2 days early, since it started 3 months ago, 4 months ago.
Okay, but I'm sorry, guys. Isn't it possible that, in fact, it's not, but the bank, knowing that you're going to get it, is just advancing you the money? It's not really coming early? It's just their way of attracting business? No?
I don't know. That's what I was hoping to find out. I'm just curious. It really, they list it as a benefit.
Yeah.
I don't see it as a big benefit because now I'm getting paid on, my Social Security check is on Monday, so now it's still a month apart.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's a good point.
That's what I said in the beginning. But I'm looking at Chime. It's an online tech-free bank, which says that its mission is to give everybody financial peace of mind. And I can get how that could work for a business or a private check.
Yeah.
But I'm going to have to look into it because I'm fascinated now about how it can get you your Social Security money early. There's no law against making you an interest-free loan for 2 days. And it's a great PR strategy.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
But you're right. In the end, it doesn't matter if it's Tuesday or Thursday. You're getting it once a month. But
now,
still interesting.
If they gave it to me every 28 days and then every 27 days and then every 26 days, I would be...
That'd be different.
That would be a really good deal. Steve, good luck. Keep listening. In fact, Tom has something to say about that. You're on WGN. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
So, Terry, the reason for the early pay is it's the ACH file date, not the ACH settlement date.
I get that, and I understand that completely. But I didn't think that Social Security, I didn't think they would access that.
Yep.
There's the spread.
Yeah,
remember?
ACH, the file date for ACH is preceded by the settlement date by a couple of days.
Okay, that I know.
Social Security payments.
Oh, I didn't know that it applied to Social Security. Look, folks, everybody out there probably remembers when someone paid you with a check from Montana and it took 5 days to clear. The whole idea, of course, is that money's transferred instantaneously. But the ACH, the automatic clearinghouse system, does have a delay between, and we saw that, what did we see that for recently? Was it stimulus checks or child credit checks that they would come into the system and get some people would get them immediately, some would get them a day or two later. So thank you for adding that. You sound like a banker, and someone's
taking... You're in great shape. Thanks so much.
Tom, are you our Wintrust banker?
He is the president of a local bank. I don't know which one. Tom, thank you for the call.
Okay.
Mike, you're on WGN. How can we help you? Mike, you're on the air.
Terry, how you doing?
Hey.
I recently refinanced my home loan to a 15-year fixed rate.
Okay.
During the refinance, I saved roughly $500 a month. My question is, currently I'm 55. So by 70, I will be at, I believe that's maximum age for Social Security to get full benefits.
Right.
Okay. All right. So here comes the question. With the extra $500, should I put it towards my mortgage? Because I looked on an amortization schedule, and that'll have my 15-year mortgage paid off in 10. Or should I put it in my 401k? I'm looking at about the difference in paying the mortgage off in 10 years versus 15.
I got it. Let me explain. Let me give you an answer about why. I'll give you my thoughts, but the answer depends on a lot more stuff than I could ask you on the phone here, which is,
okay,
do you have any other... I would ask you, do you have any credit card debt at 18 or 19?
No.
No debt. Okay. Well, assuming all other things are equal, I think you just locked in one of the lowest rates we'll ever see in our lifetime. And in the olden days, I always used to say, sure, pay down your mortgage. Why have that hanging over your head? But I think the rates are so low that as long as you have a 15-year perspective on your 401k, that you should put it in the 401k, let that money grow tax-free. We may not have, in fact, probably won't have the monster bull market that we've seen for the last decade, even if the market does very little. Over the long run, it should keep up with inflation and keep growing. And that's why I think you might as well lock in this low-rate debt. I'm glad you'll be out of it by the time you want to retire. And in the meantime, let the money grow in your investments.
Isn't the calculation, well, if I'm earning, if it costs me 3% to use that money, all I have to do is get better than 3% on the return on my 401k. So if you can get 4%, then that's...
It's less because that interest he pays is deductible on his home mortgage. So it's less based on the whatever his tax bracket is. And more, it gives you flexibility.
Yeah.
I mean, this low interest rates today, artificially low by the Fed, which hurts savers, help borrowers that... Now, they don't help credit card borrowers because I don't know any credit card issuer that's saying, oh, well, you have an outstanding debit of $14,812, but rates are so low, we're not going to charge you 22%. We're going to charge you 6%. No, that's not happening in credit cards, but it is happening in mortgages. And it's why the advice has kind of turned on its head in the last year.
Lots more calls and texts. Anything you want to insert before we get rolling?
Let's just talk about this. Right now, the market is up. It's up sharply. Just after we get off the air at 1 o'clock, the Fed Open Market Committee will release a statement saying what the Fed intends to do now about its bond purchases, the putting money into the economy. Widely expected today could be the day they say, you know, we're going to taper off that inflow of money into the economy. We're not going to buy as many bonds. And then at 1:30, you have this whole press corps of financial reporters from all over, and the Fed chairman sits patiently. It's like throwing darts at a dartboard, and he's the bullseye. Well, do you think it'll be more? Do you think it'll be sooner? Do you think it'll be less? Do you think it'll be this? And he's always been very gracious. And there's a hope that some news will come out. Well, actually, we think it's worse or better or whatever it might be. He's very good at escaping that. So these are going to be some volatile days in the market. I want to just reiterate what I said at the top, because we also have Washington politics going on about the infrastructure bill, about the tax increases, and about the debt ceiling. So it's just like a numbness here, waiting to see what sharp news breaks out.
Hey, Terry Savage, will the state of Illinois be sending us refunds for the unemployment $10,200 that we got taxed on but wasn't supposed to, or do we have to apply for this somehow?
No, you do not have to apply, and many people have posted on my blog or sent me messages saying, yeah, I got my money back from the state. In fact, many people got their money back from the state faster than they've gotten that refund on the taxes they paid, because they filed before that $10,200 tax-free part was announced. So many people have gotten money back from the state faster than from the federal government. They are both working on getting that money out.
Mark, you're on WGN. How can we help you?
Hi, good afternoon. Terry, I was wondering, at what age must I start drawing from my deferred compensation plan?
Your deferred compensation plan is a contract between you and your company. And if it's not a retirement plan, okay, if it's deferred comp, then the rules, I'm 90% I'm sure I'm saying this correctly, the rules set up by the company will apply. I'm not aware of any rules, but I will check on that for deferred comp withdrawal, because unless it's a qualified retirement plan.
It is not.
Yeah, I think that would be.
I have a public pension.
Oh, well, then so for sure, they will give you the rules. Each pension can set up its own. Well, let me just look at this.
But you're guessing there's searching right now. Not a universal number.
Qualified. I'm just looking that up. I've never had that question before, and I got to believe that it is a deferred. Let me just see. How to schedule. I'm looking myself. How to schedule distributions from non-qualified deferred compensation plans. You really need to work with the company, or the employer, I should say, that set up that deferred compensation plan. As long as it's non-qualified, it sets its own rules.
Mark, thanks for the call. Let's go to Jimmy. You're on WGN. Hey, Jimmy, what can we do for you?
Hi, Terry. Quick question about retirement. I don't have any mortgage, but I have a home equity line of credit that I owe $90,000 on. And we have... And we sold a place, a summer place. We'd like to get another one. And don't want to, like... And we have, like, you know, over $100,000 in the nest egg. And just wondering, should we crack the nest egg and...
No.
Okay.
Let me, first of all, this is why you talk with a financial planner, because they're going to ask you a lot of questions. But in general, let me say this. You don't have a basic underlying mortgage right now?
That's right.
Okay.
He's got the HELOC, though, for $90,000.
Yeah, but I know. But a home equity loan will climb when rates climb. Doesn't look like much now, and there'll be limitations on it, but it exposes you to the upside in interest rates. So if you hadn't said that about the second home, I would say that what you would want to do is refinance right now. I don't know what your value of your home is, and you're still working, so you have the income to qualify for a mortgage. I would lock that in at today's low rates. And if you have plenty of equity in your home, let's see if you might want to take out some more for a down payment on that second home. This is why you work with the planner, to see whether your income and your future income can support that second retirement home, whether you put some of your savings into it.
Yeah.
But I would, if your $100,000 nest egg is all you have for retirement, whether it's in an IRA or 401k, or whether it's just money you've set aside, I don't want you to use up all your liquidity and tie it all up in real estate.
Well, what is the rate on your HELOC, Jimmy? What are you paying on that?
Wife has a pension and other investments.
Hey, Jimmy, what is the rate you're paying on that home equity line of credit?
John, it doesn't matter.
Okay. Never mind. Hey, Jimmy, never mind. Let's go back to Terry.
It doesn't matter. A home equity line of credit looks attractive now. But why, when you could lock in rates at all-time lows, would you fail to do so and leave yourself, because those adjust, I don't know what the terms of your line of credit.
Because the HELOC rates I've seen are not all that attractive compared to mortgage rates. They're higher.
The whole point is locking it in at a low rate. And then I'm serious. Go to terrysavage.com. I promise you all I get nothing out of this. My good friend Pam Kruger created something called Wealth Ramp. Pam and I do a blog together, friendstalkmoney.org is the site. You can hear us talking about all kinds of topics. And she created a thing called Wealth Ramp, which it's like Match.com for fee-only fiduciary financial advisors. They put your interests first. They don't sell you products and get commissions. And she personally has interviewed and vetted all of them and gives you a choice of a couple of matches, and you get to talk to a financial planner. You are exactly at the moment when there's so much more, Jimmy, that goes into this decision, when you're going to retire, what the total income is going to be, what the costs are, what the deductions are. I hesitate to give you a specific advice, but my advice is go to wealthramp.com, or go to find the little box top right of terrysavage.com. It says find a fiduciary financial planner.
We got time for a quick question and an answer. Good luck to you. I think that's good advice. Laura, what can we do for you? You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I had, I followed Terry's process for identity theft when I had a problem earlier this year. Now I've been notified that I'm DuPage Medical Group. My data was compromised. Mm-hmm. Should I be filing another Social Security FBI report, and is there any place else I need to contact?
No, they've already filed that. They already know that because the medical center filed that report. A lot of people have contacted me about that. But as long as, and it's still up on my homepage on the right-hand side, Identity Theft Do This update, there are links, and I think you probably did this, froze your credit at all three bureaus.
Right.
That's all you really want to do, except you want to check your credit report. Nobody can open new credit in your name, and keep an eye on your bank accounts and so forth. I think that's the best you can do at this point. You don't need to file another report, though, because you could be sure the FBI knows about that one.
Laura, good luck to you, and good question. And Terry, good answer, and always good information. Thanks for your help today.
Thanks, John.
Okay, that's Terry Savage. Want to know more? Go to terrysavage.com. Want to know more business news? We've got that in the WGN Radio Newsroom, Ryan Burrow.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Jewel's parent company Albertsons is adding live stream video experiences to shopping. It's teamed up with social media group Firework to become the first grocer to curate its own short form and live stream video for its brands, websites, and apps to improve customer engagement. Videos will include showing how to pick out the best fruit and recipes and meal prep videos. Tennis legend Billie Jean King and actress Sophia Bush cut the ribbon on First Women's Bank, a first of its kind bank with a mission to grow the economy and advance the role of women in it. It's the first new bank in Illinois in more than a decade and will serve as a lending and deposit market for a single flagship location in the 1300 block of North Elston in Chicago. General Motors and Amazon announced today they've teamed up to offer OnStar emergency services at home. The OnStar Guardian skill for Amazon smart devices gives customers access to OnStar's emergency certified advisors at home through enabled devices. I'm Ryan Burrow. That's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Yeah, National Farm Safety and Health Week continues, John, and today we focus on kids. And I had the privilege of growing up on a farm, and it was awesome. Wide open spaces in which to play and explore, great lessons about caring for animals, being responsible, many wonderful teaching moments, and, or but, danger everywhere.
Every day there's 33 children that are seriously injured in farm-related accidents. We also know that about every 3 days, a child or a youth dies in an agriculture-related incident.
That is Dr. Marcia Salzwedel.
I am a project scientist at the National Farm Medicine Center and National Children's Center in Marshfield, Wisconsin.
The leading causes of injury and death for children on farms and ranches?
We know that animals can cause injuries on farms. Falls can cause injuries on farms. Drowning is one of the major causes of fatalities.
And machinery. Every little boy and girl on a farm wants to be on that tractor with dad and mom.
Without a doubt, tractors are a leading cause of fatalities. And the best way to prevent those injuries is to simply not take the children into the work site. Don't give them rides on tractors or ATVs or skid steers.
The focus of the National Farm Medicine Center is to help prevent injuries and death to children on farms and ranches, because when they happen, as too many parents have experienced, it is crushing. And they are most often preventable. So
we would like to be able to find a way to be able to help children to reap the benefits of growing up on a farm and to be able to keep them safe while they're doing that.
To that end, the center has a lot of resources on its website.
CultivateSafety.org.
Again, that's CultivateSafety.org. The Midwest corn harvest is picking up steam. Nationwide, about 10% of the corn is in the bin. That's a little bit higher than average, and the crop rating unexpectedly increased. Soybean harvest is off to an early start, about 6% complete. At the Chicago Board of Trade right now, soybeans are up about 6 cents at 12.80. Corn is up about a nickel at 5.23, and wheat's trading about 14 cents higher at 7.04. From the farm to your belly, today is National Ice Cream Cone Day and also National White Chocolate Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Let's talk to Carrie Luxem about the restaurant business and the fact that a lot of restaurants are having trouble staffing up. She's the founder and CEO of Restaurant HR Group. Hey, Carrie, welcome to WGN. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, John. Thank you so much for having me.
Why are restaurants having trouble hiring people?
Oh, boy, that's a big question. I think there's a lot of reasons, obviously, coming off of this pandemic. But I will tell you, John, staffing is super, super tough right now. But I've been in this industry for a very long time. I started at Dairy Queen as a teenager. I spent a decade with Potbelly Sandwich Works as the director of HR, and I've owned my own company in HR for the last decade. Staffing issues is not really a new phenomenon. You know, it's something that's definitely happens in the restaurant industry. It happens to be very high right now, but I think, you know, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. I do feel like a number of our clients throughout the country are starting to, you know, there's some that are not seeing any light at the end of the tunnel, but I think people are, you know, due to the pandemic and due to a whole bunch of different things, I think people have reevaluated their lives. And, you know, I think that restaurateurs, you know, the restaurant industry doesn't have the best reputation for being a great place to work or paying the best. And I think that there's just got to be some fundamental changes and some real effort in changing that perception. And hopefully these restaurateurs will be able to continue to staff their stores.
The perception or the reality. I mean, what do restaurants need to do to make those jobs more attractive? How do they get people coming back in?
Yeah, great question. I think first and foremost, before you start using whatever method you're going to use to attract people, you've got to prioritize your people and sort of be known for that. And how do you attract the right people? You've got to make an effort to pay well, offer perks and benefits to people that show that you are a caring employer. You know, create an environment where people are going to learn and grow. I mean, people come into the restaurant industry sometimes very temporarily while they're in school or whatever. So what can you do for them while they're there working for you? Can you teach them something that maybe they can take on with them? You know, are you a culture that really is transparent and you focus on taking care of your people, you put your people first, you communicate well? I think first and foremost, you've got to be known for that. And that's not an easy task, but you've got to put in the effort day in and day out to become that employer.
I wonder if we've carved out the restaurant business as not like other businesses, because what you just described is what we talk about every week. Hey, businesses, if you want to get good employees, here's what you need to do. Restaurants are no different.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And yet I don't think we often think of it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and I think so often, and this is to your point, this is relevant in many industries. So people are just out there trying to find talent and they sort of stick to the same methods that they've used. So first and foremost, you've got to be this employer that people want to work and people want to feel cared for, especially after people have gone through the last year and a half. Like I said, they're reevaluating their lives and they want to be a part of something that's great. They want to feel good about their job. They want to work for nice people. So I think you've got to constantly focus on that. I mean, I talk about this stuff all day long, John, and I have to put in massive amounts of effort into my little company that we have 15 people. How can I create this great company where people want to come to work every day? And then in terms of how do you attract those people, I think so often operators just, they stick to what they know. They place an ad on one online job board and they expect that that's going to get them the same results. And you just have to do so much more than that. You really have to look at your efforts to find talent similarly to the way you would the efforts that you put into finding customers. You know, it's like a marketing plan for finding talent. And if you really focus on that, you talk to everybody, passionately talk about your brand and, you know, you get in front of your customers and you talk to your staff and you really get them involved. One of the things that I've seen be very successful with some of our clients is they dedicate an internal rock star person. Maybe it's a crew member, maybe it's an assistant manager to focus on the recruiting effort. You know, put that time in every single day. So often, you know, people have needs, but they don't have enough people. And so it's kind of like you can't get the traction. If you find somebody that's good at that, they talk to people, you know, align them with that, and then you will start to get traction. There's a lot of businesses out there in the world that are relocating or are closing. How about you reach out to those businesses and find out if they have people that maybe are looking for employment, you know, and you know, take that effort, get involved in schools, be very quick to respond to candidates. The days of, you know, getting a resume or an application and calling on them 2 weeks later, those days are gone.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that my husband is a Dunkin' Donuts franchisee, and one of the things that we've seen be very successful during this whole staffing shortage is we've switched to a text to app way to apply. So the candidates are getting a text message and we're able to get them into the restaurants much more quickly. And that's been very, very successful.
Terry Luxem is the founder and CEO of Restaurant HR Group. Listen, find out more by going to restauranthrgroup.com, restauranthrgroup.com. We've got more questions than we have time today, Kerry. Let's have this conversation again another day. But thanks so far for the help.
Thank you so much, John. Have a great day.